Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 43 degrees, overcast, and rain falling. Today is Thursday, October 13th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The Alaska Marine Highway System says the engines being used in their two fast ferries are defective, and builders of the ships knew it when they delivered the ships only 6 years ago. But the ferry's builders say it's not their fault and they shouldn't be obligated to replace the engines when the warranty doesn't cover it. Matt Miller has this report on one of the first set of arguments in the state's lawsuits against the ferry builders.
Judge Philip Pallenberg enters the courtroom lugging a stack of files and documents easily a foot high. He's about to get handed a few more accordion folders that will extend that by several more inches.
And I think the state fired the opening salvo in this naval battle, so I think the state should go first.
Last Friday's skirmish in Juneau Superior Court was over the engines installed in the state's fast ferries Fairweather and Chenega, relatively new ships with diesel-powered jet drives that push the catamarans at a nice 32-knot clip. That's about twice the speed of the ferry system's standard monohulls. State Attorney Dana Burke is leading the attack for the ferry system, but with too much wind in his sails, he runs out of time to carefully fire off excerpts of contract documents and internal memos. Burke says manufacturers of the fast ferries breached warranties that called for repairs and, if necessary, replacement of the engines. And for both ships, all eight engines have been valued at a total of $20 million.
And we cannot wait. The Fairweather and the Chenega, because of the failed repair efforts and because of the loss of engine life, are in serious danger of being decertified for use in the state's passenger transportation system in the very near future.
Burke wants the ship and engine builders' liability extended to the engine's defects, especially when they admitted to using the wrong kind of coolant.
In May 2005, MTU instructed the state to stop using the particular brand of coolant, PowerCool 3000, because of MTU's concern that it might degrade a layer of molybdenum, thank you, on the inside of the crankcase cylinder bores.
David McMahon, representing the ferry builder Robert Director Incorporated, says the state's aim is way wide. They're not entitled to any more rights after expiration of a standard warranty.
From everything that we're aware of, these two vessels have operated on a virtually uninterrupted basis since they went into operation. And from everything that we're aware of, MTU has provided prompt support for necessary repairs upon request by the state.
But Director Shipyard is only the vanguard of the opposing fleet. The state's real target is MTU Friedrichshafen and MTU Detroit Diesel, the German company that built the engines and the American company that's been doing the subsequent repairs.
We've introduced evidence that we have, in fact, a solution. And that's that this ring that we've been talking about, the interstitial ring.
John Dawson has already mustered his crews to load and prepare their guns, and he's been patiently waiting for the attackers to come within range.
Scaremongering and hyperbole aside, the principal issue in this case involves only one component of these engines, the engine block.
Dawson says it's unclear what really caused the faster-than-expected deterioration. Instead of the coolant, maybe it was the Alaska environment, improper maintenance by ferry crews, even excessive vibration caused by a misaligned installation in the shipyard.
These are extraordinarily complex engines. These blocks are extraordinarily complex, and the physics and the engineering involved, extraordinarily complex. You can't wave a wand and resolve this wear issue when you don't even necessarily know what's causing it.
Dawson also says their engine warranty was initially given to Director, the general contractor, not the final buyer of the vessels, or in this case, the state ferry system. And it did not include replacement of the entire engine beyond the engine block.
The state can't simply say, we're not going to let you do what you need to do to fix the engines, but that's what they want. They want to prevent us from fixing the engines. They want to prevent us from putting in a solution that is economical, instead get new engines. That's not the law. And it's not what the contract provides for.
But as in any courtroom battle, the attacking forces always get off the last shot. Burke swings around to come abeam for one last set of broadsides.
I need this court to say, whether it's engines or cylinder blocks or whatever, look, something's wrong with these engines. These engines, they were lemons. They were defective for whatever reason. We can litigate tomorrow and next year about whether the molybdenum was the primary cause or the secondary cause or whether there have been other causes. We can have a trial about that. We need to get past square one, which is these were defective upon delivery and someone is responsible.
Last Friday's hour and 20-minute engagement focused not on any factual disputes, but primarily arcane and esoteric interpretations of liability and warranty law. Because of the fog of battle, it'll be a while before Judge Pallenberg tallies up any casualties.
All right, then we'll go off the record. Thank you, counsel, for the arguments. They've been helpful. There's a lot to digest here, so I wouldn't be checking the mail tomorrow for a decision.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And it'll be some time before it's known whether the ferry system gets any satisfaction with last Friday's action, and if the campaign continues to next September with the courtroom equivalent of Battle of Trafalgar. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
The Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood are becoming closer. The longtime Southeast advocacy groups voted last week to work under the same updated constitution. Before, they were separate, Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
A year ago, the Alaska Native Brotherhood began revising its constitution and mission statement. They hadn't been significantly changed for decades. The updated version went before last week's Grand Camp Convention in Klawock on Prince of Wales Island. Delegates voted to approve the changes and make them also apply to the Alaska Native Sisterhood.
We've had two different constitutions, A and B and A and S. But now this one governs both. They're very distinct bodies yet. They're not merged.
Dennis Demert of Klawock is the new president of the Brotherhood's regional organization, known as the Grand Camp.
The way we do business will be pretty much the same. We'll continue as two separate organizations, but we'll have a single mission.
There was opposition, some of it strong. But new Sisterhood Grand Camp president Mary Brown of Klawock says two-thirds of the delegates voted in favor.
I feel that we are now working together as a whole, and the only thing we can do from the last day of convention is to take each positive step forward to better the health, education, and welfare of the people of Alaska.
Other changes brought the Constitution and mission into the present. Demert says some parts were outdated.
You know, in the earlier days, there was interest because we didn't have citizenship. We wanted citizenship. Did not have civil rights. We wanted that. And we wanted land. And so those were things that were goals that had been accomplished.
Earlier rules also restricted membership to Native people. The new document removes that requirement.
A lot of non-Native people have been interested in what we're doing. A lot of non-Native people have joined. The local camps have kind of ignored that provision about only Native, but the provision was there.
Leaders hope some of the changes will help broaden membership. James Williams of Klawock is ANB's new Sergeant of Arms.
We have to concentrate on how we're going to reach our young generation to participate in this organization, because they're next in line, just like they told us when we were joining.
This year's convention was the Brotherhood's 99th and focused on history. Next year, it will be held where the first camp, or chapter, set up shop.
It'll be in Sitka, and it's going to be a very major celebration, given that we're in the next 100 years.
Ketchikan's Richard Jackson was the previous ANB Grand Camp president. He didn't run for re-election. He says this year's attendees heard about the organization's past from author Peter Metcalf and history professor Stephen Haycox.
Which caught my attention was Stephen Haycox said initially the ANB idea of it formed in Juneau. I didn't know that. I thought it was Sitka with the 12 founders, I think it was, and that surprised me.
The Alaska Native Sisterhood formed a few years after the Brotherhood, but President Mary Brown says it will be part of the ANB's anniversary.
As far as we're concerned, we're one. It doesn't matter what year we started up, but we have, right from day one of the ANB, the sisters have been there and supported them 100%, and we will continue to do so. And we will celebrate the 100-year together.
Those at the meeting also expressed support for landless natives who live in communities without native corporations. They also backed stronger subsistence rights and expressed concerns about the growing number of suicides. The convention also recognized longtime leader Walter Sobeloff, who died earlier this year at the age of 102. His position within the ANB was Grand President Emeritus. His successor has not been named. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Alaska's lieutenant governor is endorsing Mitt Romney in the race to be the GOP presidential nominee. Mead Treadwell said yesterday that his endorsement wasn't made in his professional capacity. In a statement, he said the nation needs a leader like Romney, a former Massachusetts governor, whom he says has a record of results. Treadwell said that as governor, Romney created thousands of jobs, balanced the state's budget, and cut taxes. Treadwell's endorsement was announced in a release from the Romney campaign. Treadwell is the highest-profile state official in Alaska thus far to offer an endorsement in the GOP presidential race. An Anchorage Democrat plans to introduce legislation exempting a natural gas pipeline project from state property taxes until gas flows through the line. Senator Bill Wilikowski says this could save the line's owners $600 million, improve a project's financials, and help make a line more attractive to potential investors. Wilikowski says the proposal is aimed at bringing a gas project of some sort to fruition, though he said he has his doubts about the economic feasibility of a smaller in-state gas pipeline. TransCanada Corporation has been pursuing a large line that would carry gas from Alaska's North Slope to market, but more than a year into negotiations, it has yet to announce agreements with shippers. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for mostly cloudy skies, showers diminishing this morning, highs around 47 with light winds. Tonight, decreasing clouds, lows around 38, and tomorrow, increasing clouds, slight chance of rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 49. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.